to the Sharp Side Podcast. I'm your host, Chaz Prada, and with me to break down conference championship week in college football, James Bitter. James, it's honestly we had a holiday weekend last weekend, best sports week of the year, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. But
this is, to me, this is another holiday weekend. It's such a fantastic, fantastic time of year in the sports calendar. I cannot wait to talk about all of these conference championships with you.
The best time of the year, October, the end of October to the end of December. Conference championship, hoops comes back, and bowl season, nothing better.
I mean, and like the start of like bread making season hasn't truly begun yet. With first week and a half of bowl games is where we do our thing. I'm very excited about that.
I don't even know if it's the first week and a half. It's the whole thing. Once you get some leaks, it's pretty obvious who wants to be there and who doesn't. It's so fun.
Absolutely. Kind of before we get into the games, big time coaching news. The two big ones, Lincoln Riley to USC, Brian Kelly to LSU. Any big time takeaways that just either you see for the rest of the season or just kind of on a macro level and for the years going into the future?
I really like the hire for USC. I think Lincoln Riley is a good fit for USC. I saw a conspiracy theory that the last year he's really focused on recruiting the West Coast and more specifically California. So he has a lot of recruits based out of California, and not to the surprise of really anyone, they all decommitted on Sunday and one of them's already committed to USC. So it kind of raises the question, did he know? So it's interesting to think about, but I really like that hire. On the other level, I think it definitely creates some uncertainty for some teams whose coaches are in discussions of leaving, like Fickle and some other programs, like Louisiana Lafayette, their coach is also out too to Florida. So I'm curious to see if we get focused efforts this week. I think Cincinnati will be buttoned up. There's no doubt about that. But for Louisiana and some of those programs, will we get good efforts or are they going to be a little distracted?
Yeah. First of all, Lincoln Riley is one of the five best coaches in college football. So it's hard to find a negative thing to say about that for USC. Brian Kelly to LSU seems like a strange fit culturally. And so I think it's kind of funny. That being said, Brian Kelly at a place where he doesn't have to try very hard to recruit, I think it's a pretty perfect storm because I think he's like good. He's great at hiring coordinators and he's like a good coach to like, kind of like in terms of like the CEO types. I don't really know if he's like that. I don't think he's very creative offensively. His defenses are normally good, at least against the schedules they've played. Now going to a place where, LSU just recruits because it's LSU. It's DBU, they get receivers, corners, the whole thing. And get him a good quarterback who doesn't necessarily need that much coaching, and get him a good coordinator. And I think we see him kind of a pretty similar coaching trajectory that we saw with Coach O, and just minus the hitting on donors pregnant wives at gas stations. It's just a little weird.
It doesn't feel right, but if you're looking for a guy who's consistent, he is consistent. There's no other way to put it. I think the most 10 win season is probably Notre Dame history. The most wins in Notre Dame history.
Yeah.
The guy wins where he goes. It doesn't seem right, but at the end of the day, he will be successful there, I feel like.
I just kind of would have assumed that he would have been, or he would have stayed to at least see if they get like a playoff run. Things break the right way and they're in.
Yeah, it could be an indictment on his team too. Like maybe he thinks that they don't have it this year, and obviously he doesn't want to be embarrassed again in the playoff, which they have like the last two times they've been in. So maybe that's part of it, but we'll see. I'm sure they'll be in a prestigious bowl if they're not in the CFP. So we'll see what the team's all about.
They will be getting Kyle Hamilton back for their bowl game if he wants to play. Of course, I imagine. Maybe he plays in a playoff game. I would imagine he's not playing like the Sugar Bowl or something like that, or the Fiesta Bowl. But could be interesting, especially if they draw Georgia. Put a, like a one. Could be weird, but in this draft, I would not be shocked to see him go like number two, number one, if like he puts together just some.
I've heard top 10 rumbling, so I was top five actually. So it's not too far out of the future.
Finally, I have to say it. I've been bragging about it last 4 weeks, but rest in peace to my CJ Stroud Heisman tickets. Probably, that was a tough loss. He still played well, hard, but Ohio State just got absolutely dominated on defense and up front on the line. It was like 10 holding penalties or like a bunch of false starts or whatever. The offensive line played like dog poop. So, I had to throw that one in there. Just admit defeat. It's probably Bryce Young's to lose at this point. So, would you agree with that? Or do you think that like if he throws three picks against Georgia, maybe it opens it up a little bit?
Yeah, I could certainly see that. If you remember, I think it was probably 3 years ago.
Kyler and Tua.
Yeah, yep, exactly. And then Tua didn't end up winning it just because, I wouldn't say just because, but he played so poorly in the SEC championship. And that's like when I think half the voters, they said, submit their votes before and the other half wait until after championship Saturday. And it was just that one performance stuck in their mind so much that he lost. So we could see something like that. I definitely wouldn't rule Stroud out. He's not the favorite right now, but it's definitely not dead.
That's one of the more wild kind of betting market movements too. It's almost like, cause like Tua was like minus 200 and like Kyler Murray just slowly kept taking more money and more money till like that day he went from like plus 300 or something to minus 800 at the time. Yeah. Like once the ceremony began, so that was pretty crazy to watch. But James, it's time. We're going to start with the Friday games, get a little ad in there and then hit and go into Saturday. As always, I mean, fewer games, but the two of us are giving you five plays anyway. So pick what you like. We're going to have a little bit of disagreement zone in there here and there too. So it should be fun. Friday, December 3rd, 7 o'clock Eastern. The Conference USA Championship is kicking off the weekend where the Western, it seems like everyone's Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, very popular team this year. They're laying three, and it's being played in San Antonio, Texas. I don't know if this is where UTSA plays all their games.
It is
a home game.
Yeah. Yeah. Higher seed host or better record, I guess.
Got it. UTSA is getting 3 points as a home dog. 11-1 record, good season for them. And the total is at 72.5. James, where are you leaning in this game right here?
I'll let you do most of the talking here. I'm leaning towards Western Kentucky. This game opened around a pick, and I think UTSA might have been minus one in this. So a lot of money is coming on Western Kentucky. I'd be lying to you if I said I've watched more than 5 minutes of actual game time of UTSA football this year. I've watched a pretty good amount of Western Kentucky, and I've actually really liked what I've seen. They've been an entertaining team with their tempo and just airing the ball out so much. So I like what I've seen out of them, but I mean, I don't have a whole lot here. You had a pretty good pitch, so I'll let you sell this one.
Yeah. So I guess just to keep all the cards on the table, it's not a very big ticket, but I do have a 6-1 on Western Kentucky to win the Conference USA. Honestly, laying three on the road feels a little much, especially in this spot. It's some pretty decent travel, especially in like, they lost the first matchup. Western Kentucky's offense is by far going to be the best unit on the field that plays Friday. And I do think that UTSA secondary is beatable. So I'm not hedging my 6-1. It's not a very significant investment, I will say. But so they played week five and Western Kentucky lost at home 46-52. That being said, they outgained UTSA by 100 yards, and they lost. I mean, there was just seven more penalties called on them, or six more penalties called on them, and it was about for 70 yards more. So that kind of changed the game a little bit. It was a 6-point loss, so you know, coin flip game. And since then, so at the end of that game, Western Kentucky had a 1-4 record. Since then, they've won seven straight, so they're 8-4 now. And while UTSA was spent most of the year undefeated, they've kind of taken like a downward turn a little bit. They got flattened by North Texas last week. And then, which, hey, we had that.
Yep.
And they looked very, very mortal for about three quarters of the game against UAB until they made a very impressive comeback to win the game. So one of my bets is Western Kentucky team total over, which is, I would argue, about 37, 37 and a half. But I do think, especially if more money continues to come in on Western Kentucky, I think there might be a little value on 3.5. Like, the Western Kentucky defense is greatly improved from last time. That being said, I don't know if it's good enough to kind of completely slow down and to just like be able to run away from a pretty, pretty solid UTSA offense. So I lean UTSA plus 3. Ultimately, I'm just going to let my ticket ride with Western Kentucky, but I am betting on the Western Kentucky offense. Bailey, I wouldn't shock me to see Bailey Zappe get a couple Heisman votes just from people around the country. And I think he will show why he deserves a handful of votes Friday. So Western Kentucky for me. Anything else to add?
No, I think he summed it up pretty well. I mean, I don't know a whole lot about UTSA other than they've put up a lot of points this year and looked really good for the first 6-7 weeks of the year. But since then, they've slowed down. And I actually faded them the last 2 weeks successfully. So it's been nice.
The Pac-12 championship at the Death Star in Las Vegas. Oregon Ducks are getting 3 points against the Utah Utes. Total is at 58. James, my friend, we have a little bit of disagreement here. So you like Oregon?
Yes.
It's only 3 points, but will you be betting plus 3 and the accompanying money line or just plus 3?
I will be on the money line as well.
Okay.
Yes. So the case for me here is the familiarity in 3 weeks. And Chris Ball as an underdog has been very successful. So these teams played 2 weeks ago, for those who don't know, and Utah thoroughly dismantled them. It's 38-7. There were a couple plays in the first half that really shifted this game. I think no matter what, Utah was going to win this game, but I think it definitely could have been closer. Oregon missed 2 field goals in the first half. It would have been 14-6. Both chip shots, too, like 30-yard field goals, just missed wide left. Yeah. And then Utah goes up 21-0. And Oregon gets the ball coming out of the half, so it's not the end of the world. But, like, Cristobal is an idiot, and he doesn't tell the punter to kick the ball out of bounds with, like, 3 seconds left when they punt. Gets returned for a touchdown and 28-0. I mean, it was well over at that point. And then the second half, Oregon just looked like they didn't care to be there. So I think that the 2 missed field goals and the punt return really just kind of sealed Oregon's fate in that game. And there's no doubt Utah looked better that game, out physical to Oregon, was able to run the ball whenever they wanted to. But I think watching that film and just the thorough embarrassment, we see a different Oregon team here. So Cristobal is an underdog, or just overall is 25-7 in the last 4 years at Oregon. 4 of those 7 losses have been as a favorite. The 3 times he's lost as a dog, Auburn in 2019. And they were up 21-6 in that game. Iowa State last year in the Fiesta Bowl, and you and I were both on Iowa State in that one. Oregon didn't care to be there. That was Iowa State, all those seniors. That was their Super Bowl, quite frankly, the best game they've ever had. And then Utah this year, actually. So I see a lot of parallels. The last time these two teams met in the conference championship in 2019, in that game, Utah was ranked 5, Oregon was 13. So Utah was essentially winning in because I believe there's a 3 and a 4 seed playing that year. And Oregon came out as a 6.5-point dog and just absolutely dismantled Utah. And that Oregon team is probably better than this one. That was the Herbert version, and they probably had better weapons on offense. But I think the defense and just the tools they have here, like they're worthy of being a top 5 team in the country. But at times we haven't seen it. Their defense has been concerning, but just the familiarity in the game tape and just listen to what Oregon players have said this week about how embarrassed they were and watching the film and just laying an egg like that on a nationally televised game with Herb Street and all those guys calling it. I think we see a different effort here. And I think Oregon controls the line this time. I said this last time, and then they just got ran all over. This time, I really believe it. I'm going to go down swing again with Oregon, but I like a plus 3 here.
So a couple things. So first of all, I do agree with a lot of what you said. So normally I do like to fade like the rematches. So like, you know, Utah wins in a blowout. So I do want to take a look at Oregon because like what's normally the mindset? So Utah wins in dominant fashion. So they don't really have a whole lot to change, right? Whereas Oregon does have a whole lot to change. Normally like that complacency kind of leads to a poor performance. that comes along with, I mean, we've seen there's an adjustment in the number here where it's at a neutral site, the number stays the same as opposed to a Utah at home. That being said, what's changed in Oregon preparation? So, like, coming into the last game, we knew Oregon wanted to shut down Utah's run game. So they still want to? Like, do you kind of see what I'm saying? Where, like,
that's fair.
Utah dominated where they were, where they wanted to dominate, and Oregon couldn't do anything about it. You know, to kind of slow down, like where you just absolutely got your ass kicked. There was certainly a couple of, as you mentioned, just like huge momentum swinging plays that really just put the game out of reach. And I'm not so sure that those same, there's a little fluky too. So I'm not so sure that those same things are going to happen here. I kind of like the under because I do think that we might see a better performance out of Oregon's defense and, you know, less points from Utah. And I do think Utah's defense will be able to kind of slow down Oregon's offense a bit. Joe Moorhead, Oregon's offensive coordinator, just what out of nowhere. I don't know why. He coached at Mississippi State. He's going to be the head coach at Akron. Now he is going to coach in this game. But like that does make you think where, where his mind is potentially at. I'm going to mention it now. This podcast, it's going to be a lot of me just kind of bragging about futures I've won or have gotten to the final. I hit a little Utah to win the Pac-12 South at 4-1. So go me. Pretty happy about that. But overall, I'm not so sure how much is going to change, which is ultimately going to keep me off it. I'll bet this with you just to have, you know, a couple bucks on it Friday night.
I think those are pretty fair points. I think the film helps. I mean, I, as just a spectator watching it, the left side of the line, I don't know who was playing over there. Wherever Kayvon Thibodeau wasn't, it was a glaring hole for Utah every time they ran the ball. So I think stuff like that helps. Like, you can prep for that, but certainly, like you said, I don't think a lot can change in such a short span of time. But I do think that's a pretty good look for the under, like you said. That familiarity and just knowing what the game plan was last time, I don't think you can change that much in 2 weeks. So I think, like, just the familiarity, maybe a little bit of just both teams being conservative to come out and playing a little scared and not to lose, that could definitely help this total as well in a big game. So,
yeah. What's interesting is that because I remember the Utah-Oregon game, whereas Utah won, and they're in the college football playoff. This has 0-0. They're on the same footing. Winner goes to the Rose Bowl. That's it. And which I think is a little interesting just because it's kind of – there's no real expectations for this game. But
I was saying the parallels last time. It's like, I think people might say, like, Oregon's a little deflated to be here. Like, they're not playing for the playoff. But – 2 years ago,
I agree. Both teams will be up.
I don't think there's any motivation left here. That's kind of why I just brought that up.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
And I remember, like, when I bet that game 2 years ago on Utah, I was like, oh, they need to win this game to get in. Oregon, like, their playoff hopes were just busted by ASU. They won't be up for this game, and then they came out and just dismantled them.
Good stuff there. I agree. We have a full Saturday of games, but first, a quick little ad from Anchor. All right, thank you to Anchor. So, Saturday. Actually, I forgot about this. So, I'm going to put in, because James, it was a solo pod, you weren't there. And it was the week before, or the week leading up to Baylor, Iowa State. Little futures ticket that I talked about. I'm sure I just rambled on for about 5 minutes, but I'm going to go back, pull the tape, and I'm going to put it in here. And it was a Baylor 70-1 ticket. So Baylor is getting 5.5 points. Game is being played in Arlington, Texas. Oklahoma State fresh off a monumental Bedlam win. A lane 5.5. Number came down a little bit. Total's at 46.5. James, we talked about this being a little bit of a letdown spot, potentially, but I'm curious if your mindset's changed a little bit, and if you think that Oklahoma State will be up and ready to just absolutely terrorize the Baylor Bears this weekend.
So I bet Baylor on Sunday or Monday at 5.5, which it is now. I thought I got a pretty good number. I thought I was leaking towards 4. At that time, I like Baylor a fair amount, but you've kind of talked me on the Oklahoma State side. Overall, I'm just going to ride with my Baylor ticket, ride with you, and hope they win. But if you look at the last time they played, Oklahoma State really dominated. They only won by 10, but they outgained Baylor by 120. They lost the turnover battle 3-0. I mean, they should have shot themselves in the foot continually. I remember us on Oklahoma State, and it's kind of frustrating to watch. They did end up covering, but they just couldn't get that final blow to create that distance. I would honestly, like, looking back, and like if I could take my bet back, I would consider laying with Oklahoma State. But I worry about them after that win against Oklahoma. I mean, Gundy was 2-15 against Oklahoma before that game. He gets that win. It's a tough spot, but like you said, their defense is really, really good. I just don't know if Baylor can do enough on offense to kind of take advantage of their weaknesses and exploit them where they're not as strong. Baylor's been a really good story, but I think it kind of might end here.
Yeah, sadly, I'm thinking the same. I am going to hedge this. No, I mean, not fully. I'm still going to be very heavily rooting on Baylor here. But I'm going to look at a little pregame Oklahoma State money line, and then hopefully Baylor starts out hot and then maybe come back in live on Oklahoma State too. So I agree. It's not often you see like a letdown spot in a championship game. But I think you could argue that this game is what's similar to Oregon, Utah from a couple years ago. So we get, you know, because I believe the week before Utah just absolutely smacked USC. And it was like one of their first wins against USC in quite some time. And then, you know, they have Oregon coming up for the Pac-12 championship game. And now we see Oklahoma State and they absolutely destroy Oklahoma. And now they are playing in their a Big 12 championship for themselves for the first time, I believe, in what, 2 years, right?
For Oklahoma State?
Yeah.
In 2 years? It's got to be longer than that.
Really? Okay. I thought maybe
I'll look it up right now. Keep talking.
And they also have playoff hopes on the line. So I'm curious to see whether – and I'm just kind of talking myself into it right now. I think – if you are betting the straight here, which I would hope if you've been listening all year, you got in on a little Baylor 70-1, that would be fun. But I think the play here might be Baylor first half, where if you can get a 3, if you can get a 3.5, I think that's pretty going to be some great value. It comes out a little flat. They won't have the home crowd on their side, you know, forcing the refs into missed PI calls and stuff. Granted, I'm not going to say that Oklahoma State was fortunate to win that game against Oklahoma. Honestly, I thought that game should have been way more of a blowout than it was, or than the final score appeared to be. But, you know, I think we might see the common trend of nothing to lose. And in Baylor's case, I'm not sure they really have anything to lose. Dave Aranda's coached his ass off all year. This team, I mean, I believe they came in with a win total of like 5.5 or 6. Which is, I mean, this is a huge success of a year, and I think this would just be a huge cherry on top to a great season. Now, the elephant in the room is Jerry Bohan, and I still forget his name. Starting quarterback for Baylor, he's been out the last 2 weeks, hamstring issues. I believe he came back in practice, but he is still very questionable. However, backup Blake Shapen, he's been solid. I'm not going to use the word exciting or outstanding or anything like that, but he's been good. And I would argue he's been a slightly better passer of the football than Bohannon. Just Bohannon just completely opens up the game with his legs. And he truly opens up the Baylor running attack too. Now, what is Oklahoma State good at on defense? They're great at running, or they're great at stopping the run. So I do lean Oklahoma State here. I think that Baylor plus 3.5 first half, I'll try and find it right now. I think that could be a decent look, but ultimately I think Oklahoma State pulls that. So what do you think about all that?
You made some good points there. So the point that Baylor has nothing to lose, I do like that point. I do like the first half angle, but also on the flip side of that, is it nothing to lose or are they happy to be there? You know,
that's true.
And that I don't think it's just happy to be there. I think they want to take care of business and will be fully focused and not celebrating just the accomplishment of being there because they have been there. Actually 2 years ago and lost to Oklahoma. So they've been there. They play some guys from that team. We'll tell like the younger players on the team what it's like. And just that experience should come in handy. But I think you made some pretty good points there. The first half angle is probably the way to go. And going back to the Oklahoma State point, they have never played in the Big 12 championship. Not even when like Nebraska, Missouri, and Texas A&M were in the conference. And then the last 5 years, it's been Oklahoma, TCU, Texas, Baylor, Iowa State, and now Oklahoma State. And yeah, Oklahoma.
Wow, that's great. I guess their championship game hasn't really lasted that long, huh?
Well, I think they won it.
With Brandon Weeden.
Yeah. In like 2014. But there was no conference championship game.
Yeah. That's crazy. Okay. Well, if that means something, then I guess we'll find out. But moving on to the MAC, where you guessed it, everyone. I have a future on Kent State to win the MAC too. Kent State's laying 3.5. This game's being played at Ford Field, which is what, home of the Lions, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ford Field, Northern Illinois is getting 3.5 as a dog. Total is at 74. And James and I both agreed that over 74 does seem like free money. James, I'll let you talk about it a little bit, then I'll kind of talk Kent State for a while. What do you think?
So I bet Kent State minus 2.5. Now it's at 3.5. I kind of stay away, and I just look to play the total on this one. Yeah, 74 seems crazy, but I mean, it is completely warranted here. So I've been on Kent State overs for probably a couple of weeks now, ever since Max started. It's been a good little sweat on Tuesday nights, although they don't really turn into sweats because they usually go over in the third quarter. But like, I've never really like paid attention on kickoffs. Usually like I'll go on my phone or like do something else and come back to see the other team in the Kent State's red zone already after they score. So I started watching last game because I read an article about Kent State and like just having kicking problems. They can't kick off. They literally cannot kick off. They like squib it. I don't know if the kicker's trying to squib it or if it's like him actually kicking off. They squib it to like the 30-yard line, and their opponent starts between the 40 and midfield every time. And they can't punt the ball either. It's remarkable. So they run so fast on offense, and they create so many possessions. It doesn't matter what the other team's tempo is, because the other team is starting in such good field position. They could go as slow as they want. It could still be like a maximum of a 5-minute drive. And it just creates so many points. And Kent State has been so good on offense. I really like what I've seen out of Crum, and just all the skill position players are so fast. They are.
They've got a great receiver. It's like Cephas or something.
I don't know if that's it. Actually, I think that is it. I think you're right.
Yeah, it's like
Cephas. I mean, they got guys everywhere. Yeah, and the big plays that you see in these games, they're huge on RPOs. At least once or twice a game, they'll bust an 80-yarder. I mean, yes, it's the championship game, and like maybe you see a slow start here, but also it's also a fast track. It's indoors. Most of the time, these MAC games, there's weather or like it's just freezing outside.
Yeah, I was just about
not
to say
a concern
that.
Here. It's a fast track. I think this game ends up in the 80s or 90s. I mean, the last time these two teams played, it was 52-47 final. So 74 is low.
Yeah, which that, first of all, truly wild statement to make. 74 is low, but I'm in full agreement. So I've got a 14-1 on Kent State. I am going to hedge, except I'm not just taking Northern Illinois money line. I'm going to grab a middle. I think plus 3.5 is actually really valuable here. And normally, as like the totals go up and up and up, that, you know, the points are worth less and less just because of variance in terms of the score. That being said, I think that 3.5, especially where a coach as aggressive as Northern Illinois is, and he's very analytically minded, so you know he's going to be going for two a lot. And I think that might create some great value with the middle. It's because, I mean, it's the MAC, and like, you know, Kent State is favored by 3.5, but I do expect this to be a close game. It's probably within the possession. One thing I have to add is that Kent State's defense has, which you're not going to agree with this judging by the score, but the defense has improved slightly since firing their defensive coordinator a couple weeks ago, which, good sign for me. But if you are holding on to a Kent State ticket, I think 3.5 is an outstanding number. So I do think that's valuable there, Northern Illinois coach will be going on a lot of fourth downs, not kicking field goals. We're going to get I do expect a couple of 2-point conversions. I think that the hook here is especially valuable. So I think Kent State wins, which is why I'm middling. If I didn't, I think I just bet Northern Illinois money line. But I think that the over's the bet here. James is right. Just the field position stuff, it's truly mind-blowing. They can't punt. They can't kick off. And the Kent State defense ain't great either. So it's honestly, like, the Big 12 championship game will be going on. You should have no worry in between commercial breaks in that one, because you can always flip to the MAC championship and you can be sure to expect the ball to be moving and some fun football to watch. So
to say the least.
To Mount championship we go, where San Diego State is a neutral site home favorite, lane 6 with a total at 50. Games being played at Carson, California, where San Diego State has played all their games this year. Two and a half, three hours north in Carson, California.
Two max.
Yeah. James, you know, I got a lot of notes in all these games. Here's what I put for the Mountain West. Don't know what to think, so I'm going to let you take this.
All right, I'll take it. I'm not brave enough to say the Aztecs cover -6, but I'm very confident the Aztecs win. Utah State is a team that is very air-oriented. They like to throw the ball around, and that usually doesn't work too well against the San Diego State secondary that's elite and a pass rush that is also elite. I mean, Utah State this year, they've been the beneficiary of playing a really, really easy schedule. Their three losses this year, Boise State, they lost by 24, BYU by 14. And they – where's the other one? Oh, they lost to Wyoming by 27. So when they've played better teams, they've struggled. They beat Air Force, and that's their big win this year. That is why they're in this position to be in the conference championship. But I just don't think they're good enough to be with SDSU in this game. And it's scary laying 6 with SDSU, which is probably why I'll just parlay in with Georgia or a college basketball team I really like this day. But I think SDSU is the right side. I really like what I saw at Lamar Brookshire on Saturday and that crazy comeback down 16-3. I mean, I was texting in our chat, and I said, they're done. But they went on a 24-0 run, and it's just a completely different football team than I'd seen in, honestly, months on offense. And I think we see that here. Utah State's not – they're not elite by any means on defense. I mean, I think Boise does what Utah State does better in pretty much all capacities. And I think that playing Boise last week is a pretty good tune-up for this, because at this current moment in the season, I think Boise's playing better football than Utah State. And SDSU just played their A game last week. I don't think there's any reason to not think that the same thing happens this week. And I think SDSU, if you looked at Utah State's schedule, who they compare to the most, just like in terms of like gameplay and style, is Wyoming. And I mean, we saw Wyoming just out physical Utah State and run the ball down their throat and even have some big plays on offense. And Wyoming is not a big play offense. So the same can be said about SDSU. I think SDSU is just too good here, and they can run the ball, read options. Lamar Brookshire can do his thing. He can cook. He can be bad, whatever he's going to do. And I think SDSU wins. I don't want to lay the 6, but if I had to play it, I would play SDSU -6.
Yeah, I agree. It's with this SDSU offense, I think what's keeping me off the number is that their offense is really bad. So it just feels like Utah State might be able to move the ball enough to keep within a possession. I'm probably not going to have anything here. I'm a fairly fair weather San Diego State football fan. Like I mean, you guys will hear James and I talk about San Diego State basketball on our college basketball pods coming soon. But like, we're both huge San Diego State basketball fans. I'd say I'm less of a football fan, just because like I tune in when they've got really good teams. Fortunately, they do this year, so I'm tuned in. But I'm just excited to watch the punt god launch some kicks. So.
The punt god.
I'll be rooting for San Diego State, but honestly, it should be a pretty interesting game. And one thing I will say, I don't see any scenario where Utah State like is able to really get margin on San Diego State. But I do think there is a scenario where San Diego State is able to get margin on Utah State in a similar fashion to what we saw against Boise State in the second half last week. So that's just kind of my lean on the number. The Sun Belt Championship being played at the home of the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. Those Raging Cajuns are getting 3 points as a home dog with a total at 53. James, a little disagreement for us right here. I'll start because I imagine you might have a little more of an opinion on this than me. So I'm going to give App State their flowers here for a sec. The most impressive performance all year in the Sun Belt, I think, was App State. Just out physically and pretty much dominating Coastal Carolina. I lost a lot of money in that game, unfortunately, but I was still came away very impressed with App State. That being said, and listen, I've faded Louisiana a couple times unsuccessfully, I might add too. what they've done since getting trucked by Texas, I think, has been sort of impressive. Winning 11 in a row is impressive, no matter who you have. Billy Napier just might have some magic brewing. I'm not at all worried that losing the coach is truly a cause for distraction. His name has been in rumors like the last 3 years. So the fact that he finally accepted the job, I'm not sure that it's – I'm not super worried about any kind of focus lost. And this won't be the first time I mention this. I'm going to mention it in a second. But I do think that there is a small parallel to kind of like Scott Frost and UCF. Or it won't be the only time I mention this. But and in terms of their season, where I do think if they're going to be focused, they're going to be ready to play. And I think that those 3 points are just going to matter too much, especially with a Lafayette team that likes to play games close. And we're going to see a lot of runs. And I think this could be a lower scoring game. So I think getting 3 is pretty valuable here. I'm willing to bet it with you at 3. I don't know what you said. You bet -2.5.
Yeah.
Is 3 good?
Yeah, 3 is fine with me.
Okay. And then finally, James, our boy Chase Bryce. He is the quarterback for Appalachian State. I can't get behind him being a 3-point road favorite. The Louisiana defense is very opportunistic, and you know Chase Bryce is going to give them opportunities to make some plays. So I do think that's the difference here. If we get good Chase Bryce, could be App State, you know, by a couple scores. If we don't, I think this could be a Lafayette win. So a little Jekyll and Hyde act, but I'm curious what you think.
I think you're right about that. I think and I hope Chase Bryce has turned a corner from his Duke and Northwestern days when he was unbearably bad. I know I faded him once this year, and he actually looked really good against Coastal Carolina. Lafayette has been a team that you and I have tried to fade all year. And I mean, we somehow find the worst part to do it. If you go up and down their schedule, they have 5 games that they've won by like 7 or less against really inferior opponents like Arkansas State, Georgia State, UL Monroe, they just beat by 5 at home. Like South Alabama, they beat by 2. Like throughout the schedule, they have games where they're shaking your head. It's like, how's this game so close? And then like the 3 times that we've bet against them, I mean, it's just opportunistic, like you said, on defense. But
very handy wins for Louisiana. Just the weeks that we decided to fade them.
Yeah. Crazy how that works. App State the first time. But I think App State's just been the better team throughout the year. You take away this first game when UL Lafayette just dominated. App State has had the more impressive resume. I think in the rematch, like, yes, Lafayette thoroughly dominated the first time, but I think App State over the course of the year has just kind of found their rhythm. And if you look at who's playing better right now, I think you have to say App State is. I'm going to take a look at this box score. I'm going to take a look real quick. Oh, goodness. Well, App State lost turnover battle 4-1, but they also were outgained by 200. So I can't really say there's a lot to take away or really anything they did good the first time. But I think with some of the distractions, like you said, and Coach Axley leaving now, I think that could play a role as well. I just think App State's a better team here, and in the rematch, they get the better of them.
That's reasonable. The App State run game is truly, truly like one of the best in the country. And like, they're just able to impose their will on teams. Now, I think a little bit of the difference is that Louisiana is just way better up front than most of the other teams they played. So
yeah.
App State won't have the easiest time in the world doing that, but like you get a couple good scripted drives early and it could all just go downhill from there. So I'm very much looking forward to this game because I think these are two pretty interesting teams. And I mean, they're not going to be playing in the Fiesta Bowl or anything like that, but you put them in a bowl game against like a power conference opponent, which I don't really know if that will be happening, but I think we might be able to see an upset there. So should be a good game. I'm pretty excited for that one. To the American Conference we go. Houston is getting 10.5 points at Cincinnati. Total is at 53. This was the other Scott Frost parallel I was kind of alluding to. Luke Fickell, rumors to Notre Dame, you know, rumors here, rumors there, rumors everywhere. But this is not a flat spot for Cincinnati. This is a win and in. I think that since he has overall been kind of, and this final scores may not seem to indicate it, but there's been like 2 box scores where I like truly think they've lost. It was like the Navy game. Navy had a pretty good case of or like they were able to like keep it close at the end. And there's another one I just can't remember off the top of my head, but I do think Cincinnati is actually better than what they've kind of come across on the field. And this is kind of a fade of Houston. I don't know if I'm betting Cincinnati, to be honest, but I'm certainly thinking about it. So Houston should have success running the rock, but the way they win this game is if Clayton Tune has a good game. And I just don't think he's going to be able to do that against just the outstanding defensive triumvirate of Myjai Sanders, Kobe Bryant, and Sauce Gardner. And then finally, I just think Houston's defense is overrated. They've been able to stat pad against some pretty, pretty bad offenses. And like they have been very liable to a couple ugly defensive performances as well. So like I think they're like sixth in defensive total yards or something like that. But I'm not sure that's super representative across the like when you actually take their schedule into account. I think you disagree with me, so please make the case for Houston.
Yeah, I mean, the case for Houston is I just think Cincinnati has more pressure on them. And like you said, Houston can play free here and take more risks because they're not supposed to win this game. I have been down on Houston all year. I thought they were fraud at points, but to be 11-1 at this point in the year, it's pretty impressive. And I mean, most of their games haven't been that close. They've had a few close games in the middle, but overall, they've played pretty good football. I don't think you could say their schedule's that weak, too. They have a lot of common opponents with Cincinnati, and they've also taken care of business. But I, like, what this comes down to, honestly, for me, is I think the Houston defense is good enough to stop Cincinnati. Cincinnati's had some struggles, not really recently, but in the middle of their schedule on offense. They've had trouble, most specifically, protecting Desmond Ridder. And I believe Houston leads the nation in sacks. So it's not a good matchup in terms of just the line of scrimmage for Cincinnati here. I think Houston can definitely get after him and maybe force some turnovers that way. Like you said, I don't trust Houston on offense. I don't think Clayton Tune is all that. I think if you like Houston here, you have to like the under, which I also do. I think Houston could just limit what Cincinnati does. And maybe the play for me in this one would be Cincinnati team total under. But I just think they stick around here. I think last year, I think we saw a pretty similar number, Cincinnati against Tulsa, in a pretty similar situation where they were huge favorites. And it's just the game they couldn't quite get that margin on Tulsa. I think we see something pretty similar here. And not to mention, Houston also played UConn last week, which was essentially a bye. So I'm sure they spent a pretty good amount of that week also looking at film of Cincy. So I just think this stays closer than 10.5. At 10.5, I think I got to bet it. Anything above 10, I think is probably a pretty good number.
That's a good point. I don't have much else. So to the SEC we go. The game of the weekend. Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, Georgia is playing host to Georgia versus Alabama. Bama's getting 6.5 points and the total is at 49.5. I think I might have like a kind of a unique angle on this. So I'm going to start and then you can, because I think you like Georgia. So I'll let you kind of talk about the game more. So I'm looking at the total and I think the number's pretty low. So what makes me like it? So all year I've been a fairly vocal critic of Bryce Young. I'm not going to admit that I'm wrong yet. Also, I would like to clarify this. Bryce Young's really good. He should be a good NFL quarterback. Like, I'm not trashing that. I just don't think that the way he's viewed around the country at this moment as, like, the deserving Heisman. I don't know if that's certainly the popular view. But, like, the best quarterback in the country where, like, of the infallible kind of, like, no one's better than him kind of thing. I'm not so sure that's deserved just because he doesn't have to make really tough plays. Now, he can make tough plays, but it's mostly easy reads, and his receivers are always open, and they're always making plays. That being said, Bryce Young is very good. And out of Georgia's full season, if there's going to be one player plays on their defense, it's going to be an incredible athlete and a very fast processor like Bryce Young. So I do think Alabama might be able to put up some points on offense. Now, on the flip side, I think that Stetson Bennett has been very good this year, and he's been good in a bunch of different situations. He's been great in two-minute offense. I believe he's PFF's highest-graded passer in two-minute offense, and he's been super efficient all game long. And honestly, the Georgia run game might absolutely punish Alabama up front. Now, what's keeping me off of it is Georgia's defense versus Alabama's offensive line. I'm not going to even go into it more. We all saw last week in the Iron Bowl. And, I mean, literally every other podcast is going to be talking about that. And then finally, it is still Stetson Bennett. And it is still Nick Saban. And I'm not sure that there are enough people talking about Nick Saban preparing for Georgia. And could it be argued that Alabama spent a little more time talking about Georgia last week than Auburn? You know, no. It might have been a rivalry game, but they were 20-point favorites, more than expected to win, going against a backup quarterback, and they were automatically into the SEC championship game, where I would argue even at 10-2, if they beat Georgia, they were going to be in the college football playoff. I think Nick Saban might have a ridiculously good game plan going, and ultimately that is going to keep me off this over. If this gets to 7, I'm betting Alabama. And I have Georgia futures. I'm not really worried about that. I still think they're the best team in the country. But with what I see as multiple weeks for Nick Saban to improve, I think that – or not to improve, but to kind of game plan a little bit. I mean, he's going up against a former assistant, and he's going against a quarterback who I think is good, but is not un-game planable. Even with a talent disadvantage, I think that at least the Alabama defense is going to show up in a big way. What do you think?
I mean, I bet Georgia -6. 6.5, I still like a little bit. I'm scared because it's just a spot we rarely ever see Saban, and I don't know what to fully expect. Georgia's not usually in this role, especially against Alabama, so that does worry me a little bit. It's why I have not added to it or bet more on it. You made some good points there, but I just think at the end of the day, Georgia's too good. And there's trends. The last, 7 years, Saban's been a coach. Bama's had 3 games in the SEC that they've won by less than 7. And this year alone, they've had 4. So it's just not the same team he's had in the past. And I'm sure everyone's going to tell you these stats. And I'm sure Saban's also going to be telling these guys these stats and, how big of dogs they are. No one's going to expect you to win. He's going to play that card. But I just think George's too good. And I mean, if Stetson Bennett's struggling, which I still have my doubts about him after watching him last year for the full year, they can always go to the bullpen and JT Daniels is readily available, which does make me a little more confident. But I just think George's athletes and that defense is too good. I don't think Bama's going to be able to string together drives. I think they're going to have to just solely rely on big plays to keep them in this game. Georgia can sustain drives and kind of control the tempo in this game. I mean, last week, like you said, we all saw it. They weren't able to string together drives against Auburn. Jeez, sorry. And nobody's been able to do it all year against Georgia. It's big player bust. And if you can't get big plays, you can't stick with them. It's going to come down to that. If they can create big plays, they should be live or just stay in this game. But I just think Georgia's too good. Like I said, it's 6.5. It's still a like for me. I think it's my 4th like, so I don't like it quite as much. But the dogs are going to be the 1 seed.
Yeah, and I ultimately, I do agree with everything you just said there, where Georgia, I mean, they're the unquestioned best team in the country. They've dismantled everyone they've played. And how on earth am I the one trying to make the case for Bama +7, where I've been, kind of sneak-dissing this Roll Tide team all year long.
You were saying Auburn was winning that game for at least a month and a half.
Yeah. I see a number that big. That's a full touchdown, and that's what Nick Saban's getting to play with. We don't see it very much. It reminds me a lot of Patrick Mahomes as an underdog, whereas you see something like that, you kind of just have to bet it. So, if I can get to a 7, I will be betting to it. I'm not going to be buying up from 6.5 to do so. I just kind of think that's a waste of money, but it's just something to keep an eye on. Still a talented football team, even if Georgia is far more talented, especially on defense. Do you know if my boy George Pickens is going to be able to play in this game? I saw he was practicing the other week.
I'm pretty sure he played last week.
No way.
Okay. Yeah, so the rich get richer.
That's very true. Unfortunately, we never saw Eric Gilbert. He's a beast. To the ACC we go. Where Wake Forest is, this is a neutral site, still in North Carolina though. But Wake Forest is playing Pitt. Pitt's laying 3, total is 71.5. I'm curious what you think about this.
So I bet Pitt. I just trust them more. I think they have a better defense than Wake, and I like their offense more. I think they can run the ball more efficiently, and we've seen all year teams can run the ball in Wake. Wake's defensive line and just their linebacker core has struggled to stop the run. I mean, when you run Army, you mentioned it. I think their leading tackler is a linebacker, and their next two leading tacklers are both like DBs. So
yes. The running backs are the running. Not next two. It's like the next six.
Jeez. I mean, that's just an indictment of your defensive line being really poor. I don't think you're gonna be able to generate pressure on Pickett. I think Pitt wins here, and I know you got a little future on Pitt, so I'm sure me agreeing with you probably makes you a little happy. Yes. But tell them what you got.
So I got Pitt 30-1. And in my notes here, I say, it sounds dumb, but I won't be hedging. I do think Pitt wins. And if Pitt loses this game, I lose my future, and that's fine. I just think Pitt has matchup advantages all over the field. Their receivers are way better than their corners. Quarterback should be able to – Kenny Pickett should be able to beat up the Wake Forest defense. And like you mentioned, Pitt can run the ball. And Wake Forest just has – they have a true affinity to bad tackling and poor run defense. And I think the Wake Forest scheme is unique, and I think that the offense can be at times hard to scheme up against, especially just like it's a bunch of like delayed handoff read RPOs where you got receivers streaking down the field. So that could pose problems, but Pitt's defense has been very solid to good all year long, so I'm not super worried about that. Think Pitt wins here. I lean under the total. Seems like Pitt has slowed down recently, but you did talk me off of it pre-pod. I'll let you talk about that a little bit. And other reason for that, for the lean under, is that I think Pitt's defense is strong enough to slow down the explosive Wake offense.
Before the pod, I don't even think like I thought about this. I'm just thinking about rethinking this. I mean, Wake Forest made Clemson's offense look like the Clemson of old, you know, with Trevor Lawrence on the center.
That's true.
I think Clemson ran for 250, and they haven't been able to run the ball all year. They've been running it better now with a healthy offensive line and healthy running backs again. But I mean, if you just look at like what Pitt did, Clemson couldn't move the ball. It's just like common opponents. If you go up and down when it's a team that's good, not just like the bottom feeders of the ACC, which they both just dismantle. I think Pitt's been more impressive this year. And I have so many questions about Wake's defense, and that's like the main factor in this one. Why I kind of like Pitt. Wake Forest's offense has been awesome. Hartman's been great this year, and the style of offense they run is very unique, like they said. And they should, I'm sure they'll get their points here, but I just don't think they can keep up.
I didn't really think about that Clemson game. I can't remember if it was yards after contact or just yards, but so Clemson's backup running back led like that day. He had the highest rushing yard total of the day. And then I think it might have been like Kenneth Walker or something. And then third was Will Shipley, the Clemson starting running back. So like if Narduzzi just wakes up and goes, yeah, I want to run the ball today, he's going to be able to. So that's, I have a feeling that's how the game will go. Iowa getting 11 full points against the Michigan Wolverines. Jim Harbaugh over the hump. Should he be laying 11, James? I know you've got an opinion on it.
Yeah.
Total is 43.5. James, why is it Michigan by Tree Fitty?
I ain't going to say that word because they'll lose if I say it, but it's Michigan by a lot. I think the 11 is actually short here. Iowa has had a horseshoe stuck up their ass all year. If you just go through their schedule, they've won a million close games. They've been the beneficiary of a crazy positive turnover differential. If you look at the good teams they've played, I mean, Wisconsin, they got dismantled. Penn State, they were down 17-7, and Penn State had the ball before the big red dog, Sean Clifford, got hurt. And then they came back and won that game against the quarterback who could not throw a forward pass. I repeat, could not throw a forward pass. It was horrible to watch, unless you had Iowa, which I did. I was really lucky. And then even last week against Nebraska, a backup quarterback, they're down 21-6, and they come back and tie the game 15 points without scoring an offensive touchdown. Their offense is putrid. Their defense actually hasn't even been playing that well lately. Michigan's been able to run the ball here. Iowa does have a good run defense, but I think Michigan is just too good, too skilled. I mean, we saw them just go up and down the field, out physical Ohio State last week. And like the two areas that Iowa excels over pretty much everyone they play, special teams and creating turnovers. Well, Michigan doesn't turn the ball over, and Michigan's kicker and special teams are elite. So the two areas that they usually have an advantage are negated here. Like I said, the offense horrible. And I think Michigan, like with what they showed me last week, with the discipline, and honestly, it's just unlike the teams of old, not shooting themselves in the foot. I think they're really mature, and I don't think they come in this game hungover. I think they put up 30-plus points, and Iowa gets the 14-17 max. I think Michigan wins by 14-plus.
So I really want to disagree with this, but I can't. It's just I was so bad.
It's ridiculous. I can't believe they're in this game.
I have no idea how they have 10 wins. Zero.
That's absurd.
With a quarterback as bad as Iowa.
That's the best thing. They've been alternating quarterbacks. They started Alex Padilla last game, and then they went to Petras again because he was so bad. And he led the game-winning drive without throwing a pass. Like, it doesn't make sense.
It does.
I think Michigan wins by a lot. I'm tired of hearing about this Iowa team, man.
So, part of me is I just don't want to lay this number with Michigan because, like, I'm not as low on Iowa's defense as you are, and I do think that it can be, you know, kept in that sort of range a little bit. But I like for the people who I've seen who have been on Iowa, it's like most of their case is just on like, oh, it's Jim Harbaugh, he's going to lose a big game, which like that's just dumb. Like Jim Harbaugh's still a good coach whether you like him or not, and like the fact that he won last week should kind of like eliminate most of that talk from him. So I lean Michigan. I think the bet to make is Michigan team total over, I guess. Because I think that the belief in Michigan covering here is the belief in Michigan's offense versus Iowa's defense. Because I do think that Iowa's offensive line is certainly good enough to slow down what Michigan does up front. So that's like the one area where I would kind of back Iowa. But here, I think Michigan's the play. They win. They're into the college football playoff, and we kind of see how it goes from there. Anything else?
Nope. SDSU plus 13 on Saturday morning. If Michigan wins tonight.
Is that a prediction, or is that a what I was thinking was SDSU plus 600 to win that game at Michigan.
Well, I don't know if you've been reading the chat. Lamont Butler's out for 4 weeks, so I'm not going to be
that
brazen, but I do think SDSU keeps it close, at least for the first half.
Yeah, came across as confusing, that had to do with SDSU basketball, who are playing at Michigan Saturday. Actually, there's some good basketball games Saturday, too. Gonzaga plays Alabama. I think it might be a neutral set, so that should be a good one. A couple other good matchups, too. But that's it for us. Oh, we got one more. USC at Cal. Cal's lane 4. Who do you got? This is the 8 o'clock game, too, so it's perfect timing.
Oh, my God. They're genius. That's hilarious. Oh, man. Who wants to be here more? I mean, both teams are 4-7, and their season was supposed to be done a week ago.
Give me USC money line. Cal.
Yeah, I agree. Jackson Dart's too good. Chase Garber sucks.
Yeah. I don't really know why that's at 4. USC money line plus 160, and like your only worry there is that they come out flat. If they come out flat, you just lost money on a money line dog. So who cares?
Put Oregon to some other team and close it with that. A nice 24-hour sweat.
Yeah. Like that a lot. Follow us on Twitter at the Sharpside Pod. We've got I think 5 basketball games tonight, which I'm actually very excited to, you know, let this file download and watch some basketball. But whole lot of college basketball going on there. Should expect you know some college basketball pods to start in the near future. We might start a show on ColorCast on Saturdays at 9, running through. I mean, I'm sure we can open it up to questions too, but we'll talk about college basketball games that day. We'll talk about NFL, our best bets for NFL the next day. Anything you may have missed, anything you want to know, you know, maybe it's about a UFC card, you know, whatever. We will be available live to kind of talk to you guys beyond ColorCast, but whole lot happening. We got a review from Ellie Overs on Apple Podcasts. She said that she likes the UFC and the golf content, which we haven't done a UFC pod in a while, but still happy to see that. Look at this. Tommy Reese staying at Notre Dame as an offensive coordinator.
Nice.
I just assume that means Marcus Freeman's going to be the interim head coach.
Brad Powell's be happy about that.
Yeah, I'm sure he will be. Follow us on Spotify. Sorry, brain broke for a second. Follow us on Spotify if you're listening there. Shout out to my boy Greg on PocketCast. You're my boy. Everyone else who DMs, appreciate it. We will be recording NFL tomorrow, but Friday, Saturday, it's going to be a great couple of days. Should be a lot of college basketball. Should be a lot of college football. What's better than that? For Sharpside Podcast, it's been great. It's been a fun college football season, and we are not done yet. Let's go win some money this weekend. Come on.